Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One ogre let his human slaves work from home on the mines, and it really messed it up for all the other ogres. You're like digging straight to the floor.
Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast, The Lore Boys, where we believe fake history is the best history. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, here to talk to you today about Dragonlance lore and diving into the creation of the world of Kryn. With me, as always, is my two co-hosts, James and Peter.
Hello.
Hi, James. Peter. It's Rumble in the Grundle time, and I'm here, James, and we're going to learn about dragons, right?
It's Rumble in the Grumble time, and I'm all out of Grundle.
So we were talking about dirty slang that we didn't like off air. I love Grundle versus Gooch or Taint. I think Taint is gross. Gooch is a little basic. Grundle is my jam for that part of the body.
Undercarriage.
That's a good one, actually.
My betwixt bits. Yeah. I am with you in that Grundle's my favorite. I think Taint and Gooch are both basic. I don't find either gross. I just think they're both like pretty basic.
No?
Grundle's fun. Grundle's fun.
Text your answers now, listener.
The fun in Grundle stands for fun.
Ryan Seacrest just standing there with like underneath him on the screen, Grundle, Taint, Gooch.
That's true. It is American Idol.
Ryan Seacrest, host of American Idol, yeah.
Well, he said text in your answers, so that's the only thing that used to, right?
I used to love American Idol.
Yeah, I used to watch it. Yep. There was that Kelly Clarkson song that was like number one on pop radio for 18 weeks straight or whatever.
Before he cheats?
No, it's before that even. It's
yeah, this is bonus content. Why are we giving non-patron listeners the behind the scenes of what a bonus episode looks like?
Yeah, just us googling stupid bullshit. We're sorry.
Oh yeah. Jamie, hit just interrupt whenever you figure out what Kelly Clarkson song you're thinking of.
Oh man, it's driving me crazy.
Don't interrupt before then. Interrupt whenever you find it, okay? So the request for this episode, Dragonlance lore, not Kelly Clarkson lore, comes from Moonring 21 originally, with a lot of support from patron David, last name withheld. So shout out to you two guys for requesting it. And we have a lot of new patrons this week, primarily because it's been like 2 weeks since we last recorded. Pete, you want to pull up the list and rattle some of those off?
Yeah. So big, big thank yous to Joey Matthews, Ty Ferguson, Blorful McChorf, which is fantastic. Thank you. Oh my God. I'm sorry in advance for this. Mattia Bedrock, but the C has a little accent on it, and we're paid in euros. So thank you very much. I guess that's Polish, maybe Hungarian or something. Ben Corbin, Christopher Robbins out in the 100-acre wood, spending some of his 100-acre bucks on our show, and who actually subbed like moments before we started recording a bonus episode, Jaden Holmes. So thank you all for your support.
Even though we did take a little break in recording there, the extra bonus content is double the length this week. And you might have sang this to us while we were away, but since you've been gone,
oh, of course,
I can't breathe for the first time.
I'm still moving on.
I think because that song was on so much, it has been played to such an extent that I never ever would have thought about it.
It was like for a couple months, it was the top song. Yeah. Anyways, that's
good. And thank you, Pete. I saw the name. I'll take a run at it too. I saw the name come in, and I said to myself, "I'm not going to know how to pronounce that on air." But I think it's Mattia, right?
I work with people in Polish. Can you copy paste it?
It's Matija, M-A-T-I-J-A. And Bedrac. But the C, it's B-E-D-R-A-C. But the C has like a chapeau accent, but it's upside down. It's like a V on top of the C. I don't know what sound that makes. Anyway, thanks to all the patrons. So we're talking about Dragonlance today. I'm gonna go out on a crazy limb here and assume you guys, Jamie and Peter, don't know what Dragonlance is.
It's a D&D setting.
I've already said that this episode, so that
sounds like the most basic fantasy setting. I think this is like your bread and butter sword and board.
Merlin and King Arthur, and it might be a little bit like Pathfinder, because you wrote Pathfinder as a mistake when you were trying to write Dragonlance.
I took out a lot of character names for this episode when we talk about the All Dragons War, but one of the elf characters is named Pathfinder. It's like Korragath Pathfinder or something like that.
He's a friendly robot, of course.
I don't mention him at all, but I had Pathfinder on my mind.
Oh, that's cool. Well, and coming off of our Game of Thrones, where we talked about Dance of Dragons a little bit, now we're going to talk about another dragon war in the D&D universe.
So, like, I would say this is not the most basic, like, King Arthur-esque setting, but it's also not, it's far from the least most basic King Arthur-esque setting. The big, like, literally the genesis, and I didn't go into the, I did read up on the real world history of, like, the creation of the Dragonlance setting. So, like, it is a setting first introduced in 1984 for the first edition of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So, like, this is basically as old as Dungeons & Dragons itself. There's a ton of books written, like, fantasy novels written in this setting, essentially. One excerpt that I got, or one quote that I got from the authors of the setting, was basically just like, what if Dungeons and Dragons, but more dragons? Okay. So I guess basic in that sense, in that they just decided to make like dragons more of a theme. And like in the one of the main sources for this episode, the Dragonlance campaign setting, not the Pathfinder campaign setting, the Dragonlance campaign setting, it straight up says, like, when you get to the section on dragons, it straight up says, like, it's very unlikely that your party would adventure for any amount of time and not encounter a dragon.
Okay.
So, like, the whole idea is that dragons are everywhere.
The more dragons, less dungeons. Like, you enter a room. There's an opening to the back. There seems to be a small thing hanging from the ceiling that looks almost flesh-like. Oh, wait, this isn't a dungeon. This is a dragon's mouth.
Oh, like the Ubala? Yeah. I want to out myself here, as I was Googling the... I wanted to just like quickly Google it. And instead of writing Dragonlance into Wikipedia, I wrote Kelly Clarkson. I was like, oh, fuck this up already.
We're all off the rails, huh? That's the thing with an hour-long bonus content where we're drinking. You end up with a sloppier episode.
Sometimes people like it. They like it sprinkled in like every season. You get the clip show.
You enter a room, you walk into a room, it is bereft of all decoration. It's a small, modest house in the middle of the countryside. In the center of the room, in the middle of the floor, there's a trap door. You go to it, you open it up, but it doesn't lead anywhere. There's just a mirror. Reflected in that mirror, you see a dragon clinging to the ceiling above your head. Let's roll for initiative.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Where's my dice?
So this is an alternate campaign setting to the traditional Faerun setting, which we've talked about before on several episodes.
Cool.
It's got a completely unique history. It's essentially just like, you know, another universe, another whatever. We've kind of talked about Spelljammer before, which has its kind of like own universe, but like it does seem like the universe is like very big in these fantasy settings as well. So sometimes settings are just like different worlds. So in the Spelljammer setting, you can travel to the Greyhawk world, you can travel to the Dragonlance world, or you can travel to the Sword Coast, the Faerun traditional world, as like different places in the single universe, but also like magic works differently and stuff, so kind of who knows.
Spelljammer is always the one that pops into my head when you were like, this is very standard fantasy opposed to the like maybe the non-standard fantasy, because like Spelljammers all look like squids that they fly through space, which is like some kind of like multicolored fluid or whatever, right?
Spelljammer's space, it's like the you can travel like faster than light travel is enabled by if you're able to travel into the plane of fire, because stars are essentially just like gateways to the plane of fire. So you can like travel in, like you go into one star and you pop out of another star, which is like your faster than light travel to like interstellar travel. Spelljammer is very cool. Was cooler. They last year, maybe 2 years ago, they released an updated module for it, which I think watered it down. There's a bit of criticism on some published content from WotC these days that like they're kind of watering things down or making it like more saccharine or sweet and just like less threatening, which my counterpoint is always like, you're playing D&D like at your table, like make it whatever the fuck you want. Like, yeah. these are just reference books. I don't know.
I saw a cool setup for a D20. It was basically one of those old bingo machines where you have all the balls in the rolling cage.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it just has one through 20. And beautiful. You just every time does that. Yeah.
Bunch of elderly ladies with their stamps on their character sheets.
Yeah. That is fantastic. Okay, so we're going to talk today about two ages, the Age of Starbirth and the Age of Dreams, which are the two like beginning ages to the Dragonlance world, essentially. So the Age of Starbirth, our first age, is our story really is going to start with a nebulous god known only as the High God. So take a hit at home, I guess.
Yeah. dab. Yeah, dude, I hang out with the High God and we get some Starburst and we just hang out in the back of his car and we just tell stories, man.
Berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a little boy who likes berries and cream.
That's an old commercial that I forgot, but Ethan showed.
Is that Starburst? It might be Skittles. I think it's Starburst, but it might be Skittles. So yeah, we're in the Age of Starbirth. Not the Age of Starburst. And it's in this age when the High God, representing the forces of law, order, and creation, steps into this unformed realm, unformed universe, unformed galaxy, solar system, whatever we want to call it, from somewhere known only as Beyond. Bed, no bath, just Beyond.
It was Starburst, by the way, to interrupt there. It was since Starburst, Beyond, Starburst. And also the autofill on Google is Berries and Cream Lad, which I guess is the canonical name for that.
If anyone doesn't know what song I just was singing and thought maybe Ethan was having an embolism, look up Berries and Cream Lad and you'll see the commercial that I'm referencing.
He's a nightmare. It used to be weird, man. Yeah.
That was peak weird commercial era, like the early 2000s.
PlayStation 3 commercials with like the baby doll and all like the black fluid filling the white room, sort of like the Tool music video era of trying to play Skittles.
Yeah.
It's kind of coming back for mobile games these days. They'll be like, what? You cheated on me? And it's like, yeah, my new boyfriend has 3,000 power. And he's been so we're kind of slipping back, but who knows?
Time is a flat circle. Okay, so we have the High God steps from somewhere else and creates the quote unquote universe. I think canonically, what makes the most sense is for us to say he steps from another place in the universe, the Spelljammer universe, where you can travel to these different solar systems. So he comes from another solar system, finds like an unformed area, somehow is able to create a solar system, whoever this High God is. And we're not going to learn much about the High God. Like he's a very nebulous figure in Dragonlance. Like he does not give. So in D&D, if you're like a cleric or a paladin, your divine power comes from a god. And for like rules as written, especially early editions of Dungeons and Dragons, like if you're a paladin, you have to be lawful good. If you're not lawful good, then you're going to piss off the only gods that give paladins power, and you're going to lose your ability to cast spells, because if your god doesn't like what you're doing, they're not going to let you cast spells. The High God does not let give anybody those kind of powers. Nobody has that kind of connection to the High God. It's very much like a figure. It's kind of like the father of the gods in a lot of ways, and he is out of the picture, I guess you could say.
Okay.
So
makes sense for father figures. Got it.
The High God was not alone in this place. So from the very void, which was used to create the universe, there came another chaos. Pete rolls his eyes and almost says, of course, because this is a trope at this point, I think.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my eyeballs almost fell out of my skull there. I didn't mean to react like that. It's just a reflex. It's a bad habit. I'm sorry.
Exactly. So while the High God represents order, chaos represents chaos. Of course. Chaos
like berries only... and cream. They can't be mixed,
yeah,
right?
The berries versus the cream. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because berries is chaos. It's like you have this like random bush with sprouts and produces these berries, which are like tasty out of nothing. And then cream is just homogenizing everything, right?
That's what I thought too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like cream would, in a world of cream, it would be perfectly white. Nothing would be moving.
Yeah,
everything would just be perfectly still. But then the berries fell slow motion, like from
splashes of color on like red on green or black on green or blue on green. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Cream, the great homogenizer.
Yeah, well, that's why when your bottle says homo milk, it's just because it's trying to reduce all life down to one singular.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the universe is perfect at 3.25%.
So, they say that like 99% of the universe is actually dark matter, but it's actually 98% because 2% milk is the rest.
Right.
We talked about this, I think, on the bonus content about how like.
It's been like an hour and a half.
The root of the word galaxy is milk or something. So anyway, subscribe to our Patreon if you want to hear that whole tangent.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we've got chaos and we've got the high god. The high god representing order. Chaos is seeking only a cycle of destruction to return all things to the void. They seem to be not upset with the creation of like new life or new things, but eventually wants all things to return to the void. So the high god steps in and creates a dang universe. To quote Douglas Adams, in the beginning, the universe was created. This had made many people very angry and has been widely regarded as a bad move. Having created the universe.
We should do Hitchhiker's Guide at some point because we've talked about it a lot recently for some reason. It's been on my mind.
I've read all five books. I mean, they're fantastic. Yeah. That kind of humor just like clicks with me.
Yeah.
Having created the universe, the high god reaches back to the beyond, wherever he came from. Finds three others who had put in a transfer order to his fancy new franchise universe. They are Paladin, Gillian, and Takesis.
Okay.
They come with their own retinues, so they come with their own like entourages. So these three say like, hey, we want to come to your new universe. We also have these other gods who are with us who want to come to your new universe.
We brought our own baskets for your berries, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And they essentially established three distinct pantheons. Paladin and his companions became the gods of light. Takesis and her companions become the gods of darkness. Gillian and his companions become the gods of balance between the two.
Okay. So, in that other universe you were talking about where you can travel through stars to like the fire world.
A spelljammer.
For the darkness, like the queen of darkness or whatever, would a black hole work the same way where you could go to the darkness plane?
I don't know how black holes work in Spelljammer. I assume there is a canonical answer to that question, but I don't know it. This is not a Spelljammer episode, but we did do a Spelljammer episode. Maybe I've answered that question before.
Yeah.
Just given your penchant, Jamie, for asking the same question on two different episodes.
It's been like four years at this point. You're going to Google it. The first result is going to be our episode. You're like, I did tell myself this in the past, actually.
Yeah. So of Gillian's cohort, he's the god of balance, neutrality, grayness, I guess. Of Gillian's cohort, there's Rayorx, who at a direct order from the High God, shapes the world of Kryn and its first inhabitants. First inhabitants are
dragons.
One guess, dragons. Yeah, chromatic dragons specifically. So we've talked.
Those are the powerful ones.
So they're chromatic and metallic are equally powerful.
Chromatic are good, metallic are bad, or the other way?
Other way around, yeah. So chromatic are evil in traditional Dungeons & Dragons, and metallic dragons are good in traditional Dungeons & Dragons. When Rearc creates them, he just creates them. He's a god of neutrality, serving Gillian, the high god of neutrality. He creates them as pretty neutral. They're supposed to interface with both Paladin, the god of good, and Takesis, the god of evil. That said... You know, we're talking about Dragonlance. I was saying they wanted to introduce more dragons. Dragons are literally like created in the same breath as the world that the game takes place in, right?
Right.
So he creates the dragons under the guidance of Paladin and Takesis. And once he's done creating the world, the other gods, excluding Chaos, make it habitable. So all the gods, kind of like Tolkien and the creation of Middle Earth, where all the gods kind of play a part and they all just kind of like get to run around and frolic and like create different things and kind of go crazy. The same thing happens here.
That D&D movie is out in 20 days, I realized. The one that I worked on like a year and a half ago.
So yeah, March last year, I feel like we're working on it. Yeah.
Completely forgot, yeah.
I don't know if you know this offhand, but like in the D&D Dragonlance universe, how intelligent is a dragon versus like a regular old person?
Are they monsters or yeah, are they like...
So usually they're... yeah.
In regular D&D, they're supremely intelligent. Like, and it's not necessarily that they're inherently more intelligent than people, but it's more that they live for tens of thousands of years. So, like, if you meet an ancient dragon, they've been alive for 10,000 years. They know a lot of shit, you know?
Yeah.
They're not very different, especially, like, mechanics-wise or, like, theming-wise in Dragonlance. So they are... intelligent beings, they are cunning, they are we'll get into the differences between the chromatic and metallic dragons in a little bit, but they're more or less the same as traditional Dungeons and Dragons dragons.
Cool.
So the High God sees that the world was made, his you know, the people that he invited to his pool party are having fun in the pool, and he's like, cool, I'm gonna leave. He exits, he goes either back to the beyond, to some other place, we don't know. He leaves his divine plans for all of creation in a book called the Tobril, which he entrusts to Gillian, the god of balance and neutrality. And it's like, hey, my take on that is he probably wants things to remain balanced and pretty neutral and not sway too far towards order nor towards chaos. And it's like, hey, here's my, yeah, you know, here's the way to lock up whenever you're done.
Tobril backwards is Learbot, which sounds like reading robot in French. So just something. Just something.
that might be something. I'm not sure it is, but it might be.
You got me there, dude. It does.
Okay, so shortly after the creation of Kryn, Kryn is the name of the world.
Ever since high school, trying to translate things backwards, sometimes it just it words feel like they should be backwards.
Yeah, I have always taken Tobril. So the world in dungeon in Faerun Forgotten Realms canon is called Aber Toril, and Tobril reminds me of Aber Toril.
Okay.
Like, just there's a lot of similar sounds in there. So that's always where I figured they got the inspiration for it. Cool. So shortly after the creation of Kryn, which is the world in this universe that most of the campaigns will take place, while the gods are still working on shaping the land and making it habitable for future mortal races, Tekesis decides to call up all the chromatic dragons. She bends them to her will, making them loyal to her and inherently evil. So that's canonically making chromatic dragons evil, is that Tekesis, while all the gods are creating the world, she gets in touch with all the dragons at the time and is like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to only think about yourself and not think about other people first? And they're all like, yeah, I guess.
Totally. So, okay. She's a lobbyist for the dragons, basically.
Yeah, exactly. a grief-stricken paladin, still paying child support, but with no visitation, asks Reorx to use his divine power of creation to craft monuments to his lost children. So he's like, the wife, you know, goddamn Karen took the kid, or yeah, Karen took the kids. And, you know, could you just make me like dolls that look like my children? Reorx agrees.
Reorx calls the police and Paladin is arrested.
He's like, Jesus. I normally wouldn't, but sounds like a really interesting hobby. So
you need to use real skin. They had real skin.
Reorx agrees. Man. He crafts 5 monuments of the dragons from gold, silver, copper, bronze, and brass.
Ah, I see. Okay.
You can probably see where this is going.
I just collected every dragon in Spyro today, and they were all emerald, so I don't know where that one fell in, but
emerald would be a gemstone, so there's no emerald dragon as far as I know. It's that'd be green, I guess,
green,
right?
So those evil, are, yeah.
Closest one.
Is a rhinestone cowboy.
A rhinestone cowboy and a gemstone dragon.
Yeah, like, yeah, the rhinestone cowboys are all lawful good.
So Paladin, presumably snickering, gives life to the statues, creates the good aligned counterparts to chromatic dragons known as the metallic dragons.
Right. Are they all fire breathed?
No.
Or do they breathe liquid metal?
No. So fire breath is red dragons and gold dragons. So they're essentially the metallic ones are counterparts to the chromatic. Okay. So gold is counterpart to red, which is fire breathing. Mm-hmm. Silver is counterpart to blue, which is lightning.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Ethan, I knew that we were kind of like behind this week because of life stuff, and you covered for me the previous week. So I tried to write an episode to cover for you.
And you wrote a Dragonlance episode? That's so
I started Elden Ring Dragons, but there wasn't enough to finish an episode. All the ones that started, the dragons were the first people and they had lightning breath. And then the ones we meet later have mixed powers and stuff. But
lightning breath, like, that just sounds like Dark Souls dragons. Oh, no, wait. Dark Souls dragons were weak to lightning.
Yeah, it peeled away their stone scales.
Yeah. So the metallic dragons are basically like one-to-one, like, comparisons. And again, it's in this mythos, it's Reorks created a metallic dragon to match each chromatic dragon, right? So it makes the most sense. So we have metallic dragons now. This kicks off a war known as the All Dragons War. So people are like, oh, we can't have the evil dragons, presumably, are like, well, we can't have goody two shoes running around here.
Yeah. No Captain Crunch. Oops, all dragons. Oops, all dragons.
So the All Dragons War threatens the very existence of this very nascent Kryn, this like new world that's just being formed, and like, you know, there's still gods being like, I made something called a tree. It's made out of wood and it's got leaves on the top.
A green dragon just like obliterates it with acid. Just like,
yeah, exactly.
Green dragon, it's like the ship in the bottle, and they just like knock the table, like the whole thing collapses. Like,
I want to say green dragons are poison breath and black dragons are acid breath, but I might not have that right.
It's in the trailer. In the D&D movie, the black dragon in the trailer does spit out like pitch. So it is like a dark fluid that like melts dudes.
The black dragon or the green dragon?
Yes, Rakor.
Okay. Breath weapon, green dragon. Poisonous chlorine gas. Green dragon.
Chlorine gas?
Yeah.
Wait a second. Green dragons are pulling up for the fucking Kaiser.
green dragons are banned. Okay, are you guys saying like acid weapons wouldn't be banned by the Geneva Convention?
It's just very specific.
All dragons would be banned by the Geneva Convention.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why we don't use them in war.
Of course.
They're the nukes, I guess, right? Like it's like whoever controls the dragon. In Game of Thrones, whoever controls the dragons controls the world. I don't know.
In D&D, they're much less controllable. Like they're supremely intelligent, and it honestly depends on the type of dragon. But we'll get into it. Like each color of dragon is typically different, like different personality. Where silver dragons and blue dragons are the ones most willing to cooperate with people, and kind of because that blue dragons specifically are seen as like cunning and manipulative because they're evil. And they're willing to work with people usually means they're willing to like deceive to like kind of achieve their ends. Red dragons are like supremely arrogant. Red dragons don't even tolerate other dragons very well. Like that, like a red dragon will not tolerate other chromatic dragons and just white dragons are lesser, you know, like get
there. Are there like white dragons with red eyes or albinos and they can't go out in the sun?
No, there's white dragons with blue eyes and they're the most powerful card in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Blue eyes, white dragon.
White dragons do have an ice breath.
Yeah.
Do have an ice breath. So
they don't have some other horrible weapon from the 19th century.
Exactly. Yeah, no, they spew lead paint.
Yeah.
The white dragons have the police system to oppress their opponents.
Police breath.
Yeah. So in Dragonlance, I think the bronze and brass dragons end up becoming more neutral aligned. We don't get to it in the first two eras, but they end up getting like locked out of creation in a way because they get tricked by being neutral by the gods of evil and all these other things.
Okay.
But we've got the All Dragons War happening right now. It's threatening basically the world, right? The gods realize this and they withdraw. They're like, oh, you know, we just built all these beautiful sandcastles. Now we're wrestling. Let's go wrestle. Somewhere else. Let's go wrestle.
Let's wait till this finishes and we can side with the winners. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's go wrestle in space. they do that. They withdraw from Kryn before their world. Their war can destroy everything they've created. The gods of light in space build the Dome of Creation. The gods of darkness create the Abyss. And the gods of balance create a place called the Hidden Veil. These are essentially, we've talked about the cosmology of Dungeons & Dragons before, how the material plane is in the center where most of your campaigns will take place. In traditional D&D, then you have like the Feywild and the Shadowfell, which are kind of echoes of right, the yeah. prime material plane. And you have like right. where the gods live. You have the Nine Hells. You have, you know, the Abyss where demons live, all that stuff.
Did we do a Shadowfell episode? Is that the one with the spooky man who get, like, gives you directions?
Yeah. Okay. When you arrive in the Shadowfell, there's a basically a crucified man who is willing to give you directions to different places. Okay. So in the Dragonlance cosmology, you have the prime material plane, which is Kryn. Then you have the Dome of Creation, which is heaven. You have the Abyss, which is hell. You have the Hidden Veil, which is kind of this neutral god place.
Okay.
So this is the first of the outer planes. The inner planes are like the elemental planes. So you have the plane of
the
fire.
The neutral plane. It's where we established the Geneva Conventions to ban green dragon chlorine breath.
Ban green dragons.
Yeah. Is there a chromatic dragon that like breathes piss onto a rag so you can like clean your eyes out?
The Canadian dragon. Yeah. The red and white dragon. So while the gods are waging their war for an indeterminate amount of time, hanging out in the outer planes, still away from the world, the gods discover that stars aren't just fireflies stuck in the night sky, but something more. So they're, again, like, how the planes versus the, is it just like, are they just in space, is really blurred normally, and it's more blurred in these ones, but they basically are in the outer planes, and they realize that stars aren't, you know, balls of fire which are burning, you know, tens of thousands of millions of light years away.
The scholar Pumbaa, I think, was on the Lex Friedman podcast and talked about that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I have a quote for you guys from the Dragonlance campaign setting book. In the silence,
I've had enough of these dragons on these motherfucking planes.
I've had enough of these motherfucking dragons on these motherfucking planes. Yeah.
Okay. Is that it?
That's a fantastic dumb movie, by the way.
In the silence following the All Dragons War, there comes a strange crystalline song. Following the source of the beautiful music, the gods discover that the stars, sparks created by Reorx's forge when he created the world, are alive. So when Reorx creates the world, he casts sparks into the night sky, and these sparks are alive. They're spirits in some way, essentially.
That does make sense. It's a very cool thing to do with like the residue from like smithing something, right?
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Slag.
Oh yeah, that's what that's called. Yeah,
it's a couple slags up in the night sky.
That sounds like a bad word.
It is. If you're British, I think it means like a promiscuous woman. So naturally, the gods are fighting in the outer planes over, you know, well, you shouldn't have made copies of my dragons because I rightfully brainwashed them to believe in evil, right? So they're bickering about that. They realize the stars are alive. Naturally, they begin to bicker and fight over who should rule these celestial bodies, right? Like, who should be in charge of the stars? So a new war begins, known as the All Saints War. So we had All Dragons War. They agreed to end that, went to space. In space, they realized there was other stuff to fight over. Create the All Saints War.
Okay. In Madden 2023, the New Orleans Saints are up against dragons.
Just a quarterback like cranking his arm back, like rolling it out of the pocket, and just like chlorine gas all over the field. So the All Saints War, while fought in the heavens, had far-reaching repercussions as horrible storms spun down from the skies above and landed on Kryn, wreaking horrible devastation across the world. Again, the gods bullshit threatening the world, essentially, right?
Yeah. And they created life and now do nothing but threaten its existence. It's fucking insane. Yeah.
So, and like, they didn't even create, like, they created life because they created dragons, but they've only created dragons, pretty much. That's like the only, there's no mortal races just yet.
Okay.
So the All Saints War gets so bad that Dad decides to stick his head back into the universe. The High God reappears for the last time in Kryn's history. This is the last time that the High God will ever appear in the universe, essentially. He tells the other gods.
Ruckus, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Threatening all of existence. He's like, hey.
Yeah. Like he literally like he bought a summer house, and then like he had some friends from back home who were like, "Oh, dude, could we spend the summer down there, dude?" And he's like, "Honestly, like I did buy it, but I'm not gonna be there this year. Absolutely, here's the keys. You know, just take care of it. Here's my Tobril. Here's you know the cottage instructions. You know the Wi-Fi password.
Should have been more of a van because of the no bed, no bath, only beyond.
But. Oh yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Here's my blog about van life for the
you got 15 hippies stuffed into a van and they won't stop bickering over
who should
control the hot plate.
One guy wants to make beefaroni, but one guy wants to do dabs off of it. So anyway, we're gonna start a fucking war.
The beefaroni one is the evil gods, we can all agree, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. So the high god reappears, tells the other gods, get your shit in order. Like, stop fucking with my van. The one true father of the gods breaks up the fighting, tells him instead of fighting over the spirits of the heavens, use these spirits to create life for your dollhouse. You know what I mean? Like you guys have this beautiful thing that you've created. Why don't you guys go ahead and make some life? So each of the pantheons imparts a gift on the stars. So the gods of light give the spirits a desire to control, to create, and for order. The gods of evil give the gift of ambition, to crave imbalance and the need to have more than your neighbor. Oof. Finally, the gods of neutrality give the gift of free will to the spirits. The spirits then descend on the world and emerge as elves, ogres, and humans.
Okay.
So it seems like elves are the good aligned ones who desire control, to create, and for order. Ogres are the evil aligned ones who crave ambition and have like this desire for power, and humans are just kind of like wild card bitches. And
I thought the humans would have been ambitious to cause issues because humans are often the source of like sadness and racism in fantasy, right? But I guess not in D&D.
You know, orcs are always taking on those internships and just trying to get ahead. So ambitious.
They'll work for free. It's crazy.
I mean, ogres, maybe more so than humans, are typically regarded as the evil ones. And like, so when we'll get into the
layers.
We'll get into the next age, the Age of Dreams, and we'll talk a bit more about the mortal races.
Okay.
But it does seem like when they first start, they are more blank slates. They just kind of fall into those roles. So they do all kind of have some of these traits, just to varying degrees. And it seems like over time, those degrees like widen, where like the elves do become more orderly and kind of grow into a more controlled,
naturally sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get into like the rise and fall of like the first ogre civilization, essentially. But eventually they kind of part those ways. Humans being the neutral party, I do think makes the most sense for a fantasy setting like D&D. Because when you're playing the game, you want your players to be able to like, I can be kind of whatever, right? Like, you don't want to be like, oh, humans are the evil ones. Cause like, having free will means that like some humans are evil, right? But some humans are also super orderly. You just have like the wide variety of like, yeah, if you're playing a human, you can kind of be whatever.
And D&D being so heavily like Tolkien inspired, Tolkien being like very like children friendly fantasy of like straight up black and white of just like, okay, you've got beautiful elves, very good, immortal, evil monsters made of mud. Which are like the Uruk-hai, right?
Exactly. So with no more spirits in the sky to fight over, the gods declare a truce, and each pantheon decides to create a new god to honor that truth. So from the stars, from these creations that they've made, we get the gods of magic. We get the good Solinari, the evil Nuitari, and the evil Lunatari. So Solinari, good sun. Nuitari, bad night. Neutral Lunatari, which would be the moon. So like light at night, right?
Yeah, okay. You can see it during the day sometimes, which I think we mentioned last week as well.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. It's true. And we can mention it every week. It's still true.
Yeah. And we also we got the trickster god E.T.'s Atari or Atari's E.T.
My next sentence references the trickster god. Just to make sure that you went right.
There we go.
So Reorks, tricks by the E.T., the god of lies, decides that around this time he needs to do something. Is the god of smithing, the one who created the world, right? He's tricked by the god of lies. he decides that around this time
all his Reese's Pieces, right?
What?
That's from E.T. What the fuck? Okay. You got a Reese's on hand? What is going on?
Oh yeah, I got one on. I always got one on hand.
Jamie's always chromed up.
Yeah, Jamie really took his chlorine gas today. He's really jazzed up for this episode. Yeah.
I hope you guys are going to joke about vegetable thins later because I got those too.
Oh, dude,
you
that got was the next thing I wanted to fucking mention.
Yeah.
Okay, so Reorks, god of smithing, the one who created the world, is tricked by the god of lies. Decides that around this time, he needs to do something to make sure that neutrality is anchored in the planet to never sway too far one way or another. So he's like, I need a physical thing to anchor the very essence of neutrality to, essentially, right? So he crafts
the internet.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it feels like that's not that's very far the other way. But
I just remember net neutrality being a really big thing. And then the guy that kept editing with bigger and bigger teeth who were trying to take it away from us.
But he was also drinking out of a Reese's mug in the Senate, if you remember.
Oh,
weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
What is going on tonight?
Hell, man?
Nothing's going on.
What's going
on?
Drunk.
So Reorks, god of smithing, creates a powerful gemstone, which he plans to contain the very essence of neutrality, known as the Gray Gem. Beautifully named, the Gray Gem.
Awful. Nice. Just horrible. It to me, in my head, that sounds like just like a cloudy, like a diamond that looks like it's just filled with like melted snow water off the street, right? Like that kind of gray.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to create a powerful magical artifact like the Gray Gem, it's all the ingredients one would expect. Banana and egg, I think, is it? No.
Yes, no, it is.
That's the two ingredients for banana pancakes, according to
kitchen.com with no E. Again, subscribe to our Patreon, listen to our bonus content if you want to know what the fuck we're talking about. No, it's all the ingredients one would expect. Sugar, spice, chemical X, and of course, a pinch of chaos.
Okay.
Ooh.
And by chaos, I mean capital C, the all-powerful embodiment of entropy, which will at some point consume all of creation, right? So just a pinch, just a little pinch of that.
I was just playing Hades and you get to meet the god of chaos. There's always a god of chaos. You get to meet that one too. You like take on, it's like, oh, well, you take double damage for three rooms, but then do double damage or something like that. You always make deals.
Oh, nice.
And then Nyx, the girl, she's like the Lord of Night or the Mistress of Night,
she's
or something.
Goddess of Night, yeah.
Yeah,
she's mommy.
She's trying to get with the Chaos, or the Chaos is her dad or something. They're all related. I forget.
Yeah, they're pretty.
The Greek gods are all very much like cousins, or sometimes just like a seashell full of foam or whatever the fuck. Like.
Yeah. It's all inside. There's literally two families. There's the gods and the Titans, and they fuck a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Reorks is creating the Gray Gem. He needs a pinch of chaos to do it. So he wants to grab like to make it neutral. He's like, I've got all these bits of order. I'm going to grab a pinch of chaos to make it perfectly neutral, right? Mm-hmm. Little whoopsie in the tuning means instead of grabbing just a portion of chaos, Reorks somehow manages to entrap the entirety of the old god in the Gray Gem.
I wouldn't trust like eye weighing chaos personally. you're like that's probably fine.
Yeah.
Someone had left the salt shaker half unscrewed on chaos.
Exactly. So panicked, Reorks decides to give the gem to Lunatari, the neutral god of magic. With the world in place, our jewel safely stored with a god of magic, the neutral god of magic. The age of starbirth ends and the age of dreams begins. But more on that after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Age of Dreams sees the first races finding their places in the world. The ogres, first to awaken, claim the mountains. The elves, Natch, withdraw to the forests. While the humans are left with the plains, where they, quote, grow as savage as the elements they are exposed to.
First planeswalkers confirmed.
I like how the ogres claim the mountains, just like, hey, we got the prime real estate on the mountains, and then it's just like no agriculture, terrible weather, like snow caps forever. Like, fuck.
And that's my thought when I read this. Like, why would you claim the mountains first? Like, why?
Yeah,
why
I don't know, dude. But Ethan, every time we've started a Minecraft world, we usually end up on mountains. We usually find mountains and set up track.
I want to be as high as possible.
It's true.
I want to look down on people.
Yep.
Ogres, presumably the ones to paint humans as savage, enslave large groups of humans to build their mighty nation of cold stone. So this is the first civilization, is the ogre civilization. They were the first to awaken from the stars, and they are the first ones to kind of carve out their own like niche of civilization. The elves, eventually, as they kind of grew, would watch warily from their forests and begin to build defenses to repel an eventual ogre invasion, should they ever need to, right?
Okay.
Foreshadowing.
Which are just fences, but that's how orcs refer to them, are defenses.
defenses, isn't it?
Do you know what their architecture is based on? Because I think like a mountain civilization of ogres could be based on like a really cool human civilization that isn't just like, oh yeah, it's, you know, D&D's version of the pyramids or some shit.
I mean, so this is like the Age of Dreams. This is, so this point in history. So the, in regular D&D, it's AD is the, like year naming convention.
After
DR, excuse me, which is Dale Reckoning. Is the standard like year in Dragonlance, it's PC. So this is 8,000 years plus PC, which is pre-cataclysm, which is going to be like a prehistory event, which kind of shapes the future of Kryn. So like what this civilization looked like, big air quotes, is very much up to the imagination of like, when you're making a game, if you want to have like some time travel stuff where they end up back here or they find some ruins of this, 8,000 year old ruins of this or plus, you can kind of make it look whatever you would want to look like.
I didn't know if there's some canonical stuff, like, because I know like there's like different civilizations, like we default very much to like the stuff that the West thinks is cool, like being the pyramids or Stonehenge or like castles and shit, but there's like some very wacky buildings in Asia from like 15,000 years ago, right? So
I think very much think of the like Gerudo Valley from Ocarina of Time, which is like those nice little like stacked houses built into the side of a mountain is what I picture when I think of this ogre civilization.
There's a canyon in North America that was built by like some very early natives that's like that.
Great.
Yeah. Not that one.
Yeah, man. Just a bunch of Native Americans with shovels made the Grand Canyon. Holy wow, man.
Hey, takes time. Takes time, but you can get there. They were here first. So Reorks, God of Neutrality, seeing the sorry state of humans squatting in the plains without two sticks to rub together, decides to pay them a visit and walks among them. So some humans are grabbed by the ogres, are enslaved to become, you know, to serve the ogres in creating their civilization. Other humans seem to remain on the plains. Reorks, this god of smithing and creation, visits the humans.
Can we do half drink for ancient aliens here? Not like a full one, because it's kind of...
Do we do ancient aliens? Is that a drink?
That was a new one.
Ancient robots.
We added ancient aliens a few weeks ago because it came up so often. I think.
And Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan went to the Byzantines and gave them agriculture, right?
Yeah.
Someone in our servers posting mail being sent to Ronald Reagan. I'm like, even if you work for the post office, I don't think you should be posting.
It seems like a crime.
So Reorks visits the humans. He gathers to him every one of them who's filled with the spirit of creation, and he brings them to the north, and he imparts to them the knowledge of his crafts. So he basically takes like a bunch of them and says like, hey, I can teach you a few things. You know, you don't have to be enslaved to ogres. You can come with me and I'll teach you how to make a hammer, teach you how to make a rock with a pointy rock on a stick, you know?
Yeah. Right. Teach you how to make a rock. Like, all right.
This goes pretty well. This goes pretty well for a few thousand years until about 3,700 years later. The humans who had followed Reorcs into the north were getting a little too up their own ass. They're getting a little haughty and a little self-assured for the god of neutrality, of all things, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that would make sense.
They're quick to learn. They're creating all these cool things and these cool devices and stuff. And the god of neutrality is like, whoa, whoa, slow it down there, partner. We don't want anything that could impact the outcome of anything. Wanting to humble them a bit, Reorcs curses them twofold. They would forever be short kings, and they would all have ADD.
Okay.
In practical terms, they were made shorter, and they were cursed to always want to tinker and create, but to never be satisfied with their creations. This is the canonical birth of gnomes in the Dragonlance setting.
Oh!
So he's like, it's essentially these humans who are just like, to up their own asses. He basically said, I'm going to curse you so that anything you create you'll never be satisfied with, and creates this
kind of ambition, sort of, because if you got satisfied on what you've created, then you wouldn't be ambitious anymore, I guess. But
yeah. You're not wrong. Yeah, and again, as like a, he is not the neutral god, that's Gilnion. But he is like one of that retinue. So he kind of dabbles in all things. Like he's the, like, these are the, this is the group that gave free will, right? As their one gift. Right. So they're kind of just like, yeah, kind of do whatever you want. Doesn't really matter. As long as in the end, it ends up neutral. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Hey, listen, I don't want anybody growing over there like 2.5 feet tall. That is too not neutral for my taste, said Gilnion, the 2.5 foot neutrality god, right?
Hey, if you're going to do something extremely charitable, make sure you do a war crime with it. Make sure you hit up a green dragon on the way out.
I think honest Dawn in the server asked for gnome lore, but referring to WoW, but you got at least some of the gnome lore.
Here's a taste.
There's Dragonlance gnome lore. So one of these gnomes, tricked by the god of lies, much like his divine father, ends up stealing the gray gem from Lunatari. So you guys will remember the gray gem was given to Lunatari, the neutral god of magic, Luni being Loon. Yeah. Moon, god of magic. After he steals it from the god of magic, he ends up dropping the gem, unfortunately, which ends up spending the next while just crisscrossing Kryn. So it's like
he was trying to use the rope to slide down to escape the place, but he just threw the gem off the roof.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Deep cut.
Which Ethan did in Payday.
Boy,
too,
I got a payday too, he said before ziplining away. So for the next like X amount of thousands of years, the gem is just kind of like on Kryn. It's falling into this warlord's hand or that, you know, random thief's hand or whatever. Wherever it goes, incredible changes are seen. So flora, fauna, animals, and the mortal races are warped by the gray gem's chaotic energies pretty much.
Oh, yeah, of course. We talked about this on the bonus. Again, subscribe to Patreon. It's just like causing evolution. Where it's just like, oh no, all crabs sort of thing.
Yeah, it's radiation, I guess you could say, where like, it's mutating stuff like wherever it goes, right?
Cool.
Bugs, birds, and dragons can all fly. They've evolved independently. That's chaos, right?
It's radiation
in evolution.
It's radiation in media, which just creates fun mutations of things.
Of course.
Doesn't just like kill you horribly.
Make your DNA fall apart. So your skin falls off, right?
Yeah. So ogres around this period of history are canonically bad guys. TM. Indeed, there's an ogre who decides not to execute a slave who disobeyed orders one day, because in doing so, in disobeying orders, that slave saved the ogre's daughter's life.
Okay.
So there's an ogre who has all these human slaves. They're
just
in a mine.
Ogres on both sides, sort of argument, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, there's not. They're all bad ogres is the idea. And then this is the first good ogre that we have in recorded history, where he's just like, you know, I really wanted to execute that slave because I found something dangerous in the mine and I ordered it collapsed. But this slave decided to leave with my daughter before collapsing the mine on the other slaves. So I really wanted to execute him for that because he did disobey orders when I said collapse the mine. He said, I'm going to get your daughter out first, then collapse the mine. So he decides that, you know what, he quote, delays the execution indefinitely. So he doesn't even say like, right. Yeah, he doesn't even say, yeah, you're free to go. He doesn't even say like, yeah, I'm not going to kill you.
That was my question. It's like, did he free him afterwards?
No. So he doesn't free any of his slaves.
Yeah, I guess I don't smash my dishes on purpose, right? Like the shit that I own. I guess I'm a good guy.
I guess in the weapon triangle, ambition does beat free will because free will is, he doesn't have free will anymore.
Right? Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So learn like this ogre Igraine is said to be the first ogre to learn compassion, right? He decides then to give his people more freedoms, not freedom, Peter. Don't be confused. He establishes, you know, the 40-hour work week. He establishes some amount of paid sick leave, you know. the government mandated bare minimum amount of paid sick leave is what he
institutes. Now he gives his slaves $6.25 an hour, right?
Like exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, they're allowed to like move their face away while they're giving ogre pedicures or whatever now. Like, imagine those feet at the top of the mountain there, how dirty they would be.
So big.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, canonically, ogres are pretty. They're beautiful at a certain point in history. That changes. I'll read you guys a quote in like just a little bit about that. But this ogre Igraine gives these people more freedom. He allows them, you know, a little bit more leeway, and it turns out like, hey, that leads to more productivity, which leads to better profits in this fantasy world.
Okay. 37.5-hour week, actually.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, real capitalism thing. Yeah, yeah. Employers only want you happier because you'll be more productive. Yeah. And if it was more productive to keep you unhappy, then they would, in which they do. In some cases. Yeah.
So he anyway, whatever, he learns his lesson. He learns that this is actually more productive. But this causes others to take notice, and they're like, "Well, I have an emerald mine too," and I don't want to treat my workers like that.
So, two extra grains of rice over the course of a slave's life does amount to 100 extra grains of rice. The additional calories do get one full extra emerald mined out of the wall.
Mined per.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it is worth the investment over time.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is all seen as bad optics for the other ogres who are wantonly executing slaves. And the compassionate Igraine was declared a heretic and driven out of society. He and his kin departed with the humans to distant lands, and they eventually become the Irda, a blue-skinned species of the world of Kryn. So they become like a subspecies of ogre in the future called the Irda, named after him.
I like one ogre let his human slaves work from home on the mines, and it really messed it up for all the other ogres.
You're like digging straight to the floor.
But yeah, you open the mine shaft, and there's not even a mine shaft; it's just a mirror. Reflecting a dragon on the ceiling because
roll for initiative. Take your bingo thing.
Eventually, so this grind set does not work out for the ogres. I have a quote for you guys, another one from the campaign setting. As ogres continue to embrace cruelty, they begin falling prey to their own decadence. More and more ogre children are born without the beauty or power of their ancestors, as ogres begin to outwardly reflect their inner ugliness. Human slaves rise in revolution, overthrowing the tyranny of their masters. As many ogres are slain, their cities are razed, and the ogre civilization falls.
Okay. So their faces got stuck like that. Like the lesson your mom would tell you, right?
Yeah. A warning to all the Gen Zers out there.
Yeah.
Don't make rude faces.
Or be ambitious.
Rise up against your masters, maybe, but like just don't make rude faces. Lessons take away.
The humans are the one who rose up against their masters.
Oh, excuse me, that's true.
The ogres are the masters. So this is the fall of the ogre civilization. And kind of in that power vacuum around the same time, who knows? We have a familiar group seeking a familiar dream. The elves are looking for a forest to live in. They leave their ancestral home, which was a forest, and end up in a new forest called the Sylvanesti Forest, where they have a fruitful 100 years doing as elves do. Eventually,
is
though,
that a lot for elves in this, or is that like not really a good track record? Are they also like basically immortal in Dragonlance?
I believe they are extremely long lived in Dragonlance. Okay. I actually didn't think to look it up, but I'm gonna assume that they're like other D&D elves and that they are very, very long lived. And this represents a generation of elves, like the one generation of elves living there fruitfully for 100 years. You know.
Okay.
So they set up in this place called the Sylvanesti Forest. Eventually, their outposts in the forest begin to encroach upon the sovereign land of the dragons of Takhesis. You guys will remember Takhesis is a big bad Dami Mami goddess of evil. This predictably is not very kosher to the evil chromatic dragons who were kind of occupying that land that's being encroached on. And the elven invasion kicks off what is known as the First Dragon War. Technically the Second Dragon War, if you count the All Dragon War that we already talked about. But this is the First Dragon War, because it's a war between the dragons, not a war between the gods over the fate of dragons.
Right. It's against the dragons, not between the dragons.
The dragons are leading this one, whereas the dragons were like the foot soldiers in the last one.
Oh, yeah.
And now the mortal races are the foot soldiers with the dragons leading this one.
Right. It's inter-dragonal, not intra-dragonal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So an ancient evil red dragon named Cremacia sees an opportunity while the metallic dragons are away at a funeral and strikes at the Sylvanesti elves.
It's like a mob hit. That's like a Sopranos shit right there.
So, okay. So maybe this is a good time to talk about this, where the sources on this, like this was first introduced in 1984, the Dragonlance setting. There's been books published there's a bunch of novels published. There's campaign settings which have been published for pretty much every edition of Dungeons and Dragons. There's a lot of different sources, and they all kind of change the story a little bit.
Okay.
One telling of this exact event was that actually the evil red dragon Cremacia first sends out a hit and essentially assassinates three metallic dragons, which kicks this all off.
Interesting. Okay, Jamie, do you have a relevant prop at hand for this for some reason?
1984, that was the year Panama by Van Halen came out.
Panama.
Okay.
I don't know it on electric guitar. I wish I did.
For listeners, know, he did pull up his guitar.
He did, yeah.
So
Shell also nice.
Yeah. So the I kind of blend some of the storylines to make the most interesting for, which is something we've talked about before on the show, that I tend to do that in my episodes, where if there's multiple sources, I try and pick the coolest parts of each different source, right?
Floor Boys canon, baby. You signed up for exactly. that when you downloaded the fucking episode.
Exactly. So Cremacia, evil red dragon, attacks the elves while the metallic dragons are away. Alongside their ogre companions, the chromatic dragons strike the elven outposts, but the elves are surprisingly difficult to beat. They stand their ground, they fight back, they take pretty devastating losses, but they are at least bloodying noses on their way out. They're not really killing dragons, but they're at least killing a fair share of ogres.
How hard is it to kill a dragon in D&D?
Very hard. Yeah. An ancient dragon can be like a years long villain, you know what I mean? Like it could be like you it takes years of playing with your friends to get to the point where you can take on an ancient dragon.
Okay. Elves would make good soldiers, other than they probably don't have kids as quick as other races, but being in complete order with each other, like that's where armies crumble first, right? Is like as soon as like the middle of your army loses their guts, then it gets like plowed in and you can get like scissored open and all that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've talked about this before on the podcast, but in most like historical battles, it's usually like 10% of one side's forces sustain losses. And like the rest of the army just like crumbles and like surrenders. And it's like, well, that's too much. Cause it is a lot of people, right? But like you never see battles where it's like to the last man. That's very, very, very rare in a historical context.
Yeah.
If you had the order to just like stand there and die, then hell yeah, you'd be a great soldier.
Yeah, you gotta love all your brothers next to you, like the bridge burners, and
exactly
go very far.
So eventually, the metallic dragons return from the west from their funeral and see the horror of the elves being slaughtered. The Metallic Dragons are led by one named
Forest Unlocked. Someone's broken in.
The Metallic Dragons are led by one named Orokin, a gold dragon. He leads a counterattack against the Chromatics, but the evil dragons are anticipating it, ambush them, leading to three of the five Metallic Dragons to be killed. So this is in that alternate telling. Instead of three of the five being killed here, it was Cremacia sent out a hit and killed three of those five, which kicked off the war between the elves and the ogres separately. Mm. Not for nothing, Orokin and another Metallic Dragon, his brother Darlintan, managed to take a few Chromatics down, but they realized early on that they are outclassed by their Chromatic counterparts.
Uh-oh.
It turns out the Chromatic Dragons have a little something called magic on their side. So in D&D, dragons can cast, most of them are very proficient spellcasters, and they'll have like a prepared spell list whenever you're, as a DM, you're running a dragon. Usually they'll know spells to cast. It seems at this point,
other than their elemental breath and whatnot.
Yeah, their elemental breath is usually like a feature of their biology, I guess. They're intelligent creatures who can learn spells. So spells is usually like memorization of specific phrases, components, and gestures. So
Mage Hand
is a spell, I'll give you that. So when you
casting lightning right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing the shocker gesture for everyone at home. Yeah, when you're playing D&D and you are playing a spellcaster, any spell you cast will usually have components to it, which is V, S, and M, which is verbal, somatic, and material. Meaning, if you want to cast the spell jump, your character has a grasshopper's leg, which he pulls out of his component pouch and uses to cast the spell jump. Essentially,
Van Halen, 1984. Bop, 1984.
Bop, bop,
look at this guy, and he's right on it. Jump right there.
Might as well jump.
It's a good album with the baby on the front, you know, with the cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Then there's a verbal, which is you say the, you know, Avada
Kedavra. Or the Digimon, like, the breaths.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you say your verbal component, and then somatic is like you have to physically make gestures in the air of like, you have to like draw patterns in the air or something like that, right?
The material is like, you got to have your book with you.
Material is like the grasshopper, like the jump.
You said it already. Okay. I was too focused.
You got very excited about Van Halen. Exactly. Yeah. So dragons, they have their spell breath, but then they're also, as they're intelligent creatures that have lived for a long time, they can also memorize these spells. A lot of like being a wizard in Dungeons and Dragons is just, anybody can study and become a wizard. You don't have to be special if you just put in the hours and like...
Yeah, like sorcerer is magic
innate
biologically, and like wizard is magic by nerd, right?
If I was a wizard, I'd call myself Top Jimmy if I was a wizard.
Top Jimmy.
That's another one off the album. Let's see if I can get them all.
I've never heard that song. My first ever concert was Van Halen with you, and I've never heard the song Pop Jimmy.
It's number three on the disc.
Number three on the call sheet.
Right after Jim. Jump. No, Jim is Jimmy.
Jimp.
So the... Jimp. Put on your gym
suit, well, Jimbo.
Okay.
The guy in full leather suit just rolls out of the closet.
it's a soft G gimp, not a hard G gimp.
That's so funny. We've had this discussion before on air. I know we have. I've asked you guys this question, but I thought about it again today. That in my mind, hard G and soft G are switched. Because I remember asking the question. I remember Jamie saying, "G is hard G."
Yeah,
and
that's what I think.
It's backwards for me, but everybody agrees with you guys. You guys are right, but that's, in my mind, it's backwards. Just sounds harder. I don't know. I don't know why.
And that upside down accent we had on our patron, that's a V rather than a chapeau, a hat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to think that's a hard, because it's like a staccato. It's like a staccato in music.
Interpreted it as hard, like, and short. Because it's clearly a European name, and like in Greek, and what I assume is Eastern Europe, it's like a... sort of sound.
Let's not look at Let's not look it up, though. Let's
I'm not going to Google it.
Let's never learn to say this. Yeah. This
I will Google Kelly right. Clarkson at any time, but I will not. I'm not going to learn this person's name.
Okay. Kelly Clarkson.
Kelly Clarkson.
Yes.
Okay, so chromatic dragons have magic. All to say, chromatic dragons have magic.
Exactly.
Metallic dragons don't. So Orokin and Darlington, the metallic dragons, they're forced to flee. In the face of magic, they leave.
Are they both gold?
No, Arakan is gold. Darlington is silver.
Okay.
And then it's presumably the copper, brass, and bronze dragons who are killed. Right. They have to flee so urgently that they have to leave the bodies of their fallen brethren behind. Like, they can't even like leave with those bodies, right?
That's the origin of first and second place being gold and silver as they raced away to escape.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't even recycle them. They couldn't get their 20 cents at the grocery store for their dragon.
Oh, you won bronze at the Olympics? You might as well be dead, dude. So the chromatic dragons don't pursue. Chromatia wanted to focus on destroying the elves and reclaiming that territory. Arakan and Darlington both agree that the only way they can win this war truly is to get their own magic. So they draw straws. Darlington elects to stay behind, protect the elves in their ruthless war. So they lay ambushes, they build strongholds throughout the woods. While the chromatic dragons and their ogre servants were strong, the resilience of the elves and Darlington eventually ground the war to a stalemate, more or less.
Okay.
So they drive back into the forest, but like this is home turf advantage, and they're kind of able to hold off the chromatic dragons and their ogre servants.
Yeah, it's like guerrilla warfare when you're on home turf, right?
Exactly.
You know the land.
It's the invasion of Vietnam.
In my head for the names, where like Orokin, like O-R, is French for gold. And then Darlington supposed to be, but A-R Argentin is French for.
And Orokin is A-U-A-U-R even. So A-U is the
Italian. A-U-R, okay. Right?
It's clearly like derived from, and like the backronym or the back lore, you know, is that this is where the words for gold and silver come from, right?
Yeah.
It's from this gold dragon and the silver dragon.
Because 8,000 years before the cataclysm, they still had Latin.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that 8,000 years, that's old Italian. So Orokin leaves his brother behind to defend the homestead. He parts with three elven sages in search of magic. The sages help Orokin to open a gate to the realms of the gods, where eventually the quartet met up with, wouldn't you know, Solinari, Lunatari, and Nuitari. So I couldn't find any mention of the gods of magic actually giving the metallic dragons magic. I'm going to say Loreboy's canon they did, and that metallic dragons are probably spellcasters, and this is probably where it started. But at no point does it says they gave them magic. Instead,
but they still live for centuries. They can memorize it anyway, right? Like a wizard?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Like, okay. So the god, like in D&D 2, and like listen to our very first D&D episode where we talk about like Karsis, and there was like the god of magic, Mistral, who ends up like being unraveled by Karsis and then reforming as the goddess Mistra after the fact, and like the rules of magic change throughout time. So it's like in current, you know, modern day in our fantasy setting, that's how magic works. That's not necessarily how magic always worked.
Okay.
Gift of magic being imparted by these gods was probably like a deliberate thing at some point in history. And like they can't just like go to school right now to learn magic. But it has to be imparted to them somehow.
Yeah, okay. I would not that the dragons are going to some fucking academy during their genocidal war. But
yeah, exactly. So the gods teach Orokin not how to cast spells. Instead, they teach
him how to read and a stack of magic books.
And the books are called Dragonstones. So they teach him how to create these things called Dragonstones, which apparently can be used to capture the essences of dragons. So they give them magic pokeballs, essentially. They're like,
okay,
we don't got spells for you. We're not the move tutor. This is the Pokemart. Here are your pokeballs, sir.
Okay. They're not capturing the spells. They're capturing the dragons themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and we'll get into how specifically they work. But gemstones in hand, The three brothers, the sages, and Orokin return to the forest and begin to shift the war in their favor. Chromatic dragons, it turns out, tend to fight by grouping with like colors. So we kind of talked about it before, how red dragons don't like almost any other dragons.
Yeah.
Red dragons don't even like other red dragons. Like they're supremely arrogant and they believe that they are top of the food chain. Like that specific dragon is the top of the food chain. They're kind of arrogance personified.
Oh, in Divine Original Sin or whatever, Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yeah.
There's that dragon and I hate it.
The red prince is the dragon.
He was so fucking arrogant. And I was like, I don't want him on my team. And he's a red dragon.
Yeah, exactly.
This makes sense. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So that's not necessarily, that's not the case for all chromatic dragons, but all chromatic dragons tend to group by color. So green dragons actually don't really like the white, the black, the blue, or the red. Like they just want to fight. They're okay with other green dragons, but they just want to stick with green dragons.
All the other ones keep criticizing our fucking war crimes during the trench war.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the same goes with black dragons, white dragons, blue dragons. Like they all just want to like group together. Red dragons uniquely are like, they will group with other red dragons, but they specifically don't even like that. You know, they're like the most extreme of these examples.
Don't worry, guys. We got one of every dragon to help us write this script. So everyone is represented and everything is fine.
This like quirk of chromatic dragons gives the side of the metallic dragons a unique advantage of only needing to set up a single dragonstone trap at a time, right? So they basically like set up the green dragonstone, the green dragons show up and they trigger the trap and they capture all the green dragons in the stone.
Whoa.
In the Pokeball. And now there's no blue dragon flying around to go and tell the black dragons like, oh, by the way, they got Pokeballs now. So Darlington.
It's magic rocks, kind of, actually. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Kind of magic all rocks. Right. Yeah. Darlington, now pretty battle hardened, lays three very successful traps. He leads the white, black, and green clans into them and captures the chromatic dragons into their respective white, black, and green dragon zones. So those clans are off the table. They're not in the war anymore. As far as I can tell, and this is prehistory, it's prehistory of a fantasy world, so it's hard to find examples of like, did any white dragons like escape this trap? I couldn't find mention of it. I think Loreboy's Canon will say like, all of them are trapped unless at the table you're like, I want to have a super ancient white dragon who happened to be the one white dragon who didn't get caught.
He stayed home, right?
You know what I mean? Yeah. So now, fellas, you've successfully sprung a trap on a village of extremely powerful, evil chromatic dragon.
Okay.
Now you've got a stone containing the souls of each of those dragons trapped inside. Presumably, if they ever got out, they'd be pretty miffed and liable to bite and or scratch you. What would you two, Jamie and Peter, do with this stone?
I would launch it into the sun, or one of them, probably. Except for story purposes, I would probably, I don't know, entrust it to the same guy that had dropped the Chaos Stone before, right?
I'd give it to the elves, because the elves seem like the ones who could fuck up the humans the most. The elves have it now.
The elves are the ones working with the metallic dragons. So they're the ones that kind of have it right now. It's metallic dragons are working with the elves in this. It's the war is metallic dragons plus elves versus ogres and chromatic dragons.
I put it in a tree.
Okay. So
at the top every Christmas,
Peter, our heroes decide the sides of good decide that the best thing to do with the stones is to take them north into the mountains and drop them into a bottomless pit.
All right.
I mean, as good as anything, right? Just throw them in a hole. Stop worrying about
the black hole that you had asked about earlier, Jamie. Like, how do they work? It's like trash, basically. That's good.
Yeah.
I burn the garbage, we get that nice smell, and everything's gone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't finish my research into the Dragonlance world. I'm gonna guess at some point in the future, they're gonna turn up, right? People are gonna be like digging and gonna be like, hey, what's this weird red, white, green, black, and blue stones?
That's all these
it's a bottomless gems. Pit. Yeah. It's a bottomless pit. The only way to get to it is to fall faster than the stones and then somehow turn around and get out.
Yeah, I suppose like researchers could eventually, if with their technology, overtake the stones and find out what is actually there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're bottomless in the Carlsbad cavern sense, where it's advertise as such, but just nobody's ever made a rope long enough to get to the bottom, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or the penny hitting the bottom is like, so far it's too quiet to hear, so there's no
exactly
proof, right?
Exactly.
I just had, I have no idea why, a vision of the Spy Kids falling down a very deep pit. I don't know why, if they found a bottom.
Did that happen in one of the movies?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Now, remember the bad guys that were like fingers. Thumbs or something?
Yeah. They were like five thumbs. It was like five thumbs. Like he had thumb feet. Oh. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It was like Glover.
Exactly.
Yeah. If Glover was Exodia. I'm like,
just Jamie's got a new pair of glasses and he actually like pushed up the bridge of his glasses when he says, well, they were like Glover. It's like a new power unlocked on the other side of the screen.
I got
very,
my man.
Very intimidating. Okay, so the elves go to the north. They essentially bury the stones, let's say.
Yeah.
While this is happening, the Blue Dragon Clan, possibly the strongest clan, was preparing for their attack. Now, blue dragons, we talked about earlier, they're known to be clever. They work with mortal races, so they work very closely with the ogres. And like, while there was no blue dragons at the other Dragonstone events, there was probably ogres there, and the ogres have probably been talking. And the blue dragons, I'm going to say Loreboy's canon, are the only ones who are like, hey, did anything fucked up happen when all the other dragons at the last attacks just disappeared and we like couldn't find their bodies or anything? Like one of the ogres is like, oh yeah, they got stones that suck you guys into them. And like the blue dragons are the first dragons that are like, oh, okay, let's do something about that, right?
That's good Lore Wars canon.
So being the type of dragon most willing to work with mortal races, the blue dragons gather together a group of ogres, send them to steal the blue dragon stone ahead of their attack.
Okay.
So, and they succeed. They grab the blue dragon stone and then they attack. So, Orokin and his brother Darlington knows that they still have two fronts to fight on. So they captured the green, black, and white dragon clans, but the blue is coming and there is still the red out there. The single red, ancient red dragon, Cremacia.
Right.
Red dragons, like I've said a few times now, luckily hate the mortal races, probably the most arrogant of the chromatic dragons, so weren't about to send some lackeys to capture the red dragonstone. Orokin decides he would take the fight to Cremacia himself, and the red general and him kind of square off. Darlington stays behind to fight the blue dragon. So we have Silver
again. Hit them with it? Like a Pokeball? Or is it just like it being clear around just like sucks them
not
in?
Not clear. Whatever you want the Loreboy's canon of like activating this could be. Maybe it is like some, again, the gods of magic never explicitly gave Orokin magic. I'm going to say Loreboy's canon, they did give him magic, and it's some magic command word that activates these stones. Okay. Or like it is casting a spell with these stones in the vicinity that sucks the dragons.
Right. I think they just cartoon diamond with a hatch on top, and it's just like he gives the incantation, just like boink, opens, and
exactly,
then sucks everybody in with a bunch of wind.
I was thinking
like the mosquito catcher kind of thing, where it's like you leave it out on the porch, and they're really drawn to the light, and they're inside.
Oh, the bug zapper lamp?
I'm picturing a cardboard box made out of diamond propped up on a stick with a string leading from it.
Also made of diamonds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Easy, yeah.
So Darlington calls upon the elves to retrieve the blue dragonstone, which was stolen, knowing like he's not going to be able to beat the blue dragons without it. There's five blue dragons. There's one of him, one silver dragon. Darlington makes his stand against this host of blue dragons while the elves make for the blue dragonstone. Ultimately, the elves win over the ogres. They retrieve the blue dragonstone. They manage to get it back to Darlington. When they return, the silver dragon was locked in battle with three blue dragons, having already managed to slay two of the five.
Oh,
but
shit.
He was mortally wounded in the fight. So he's not going to survive this.
He's using Mage Hand.
Yeah.
No, Mage Hand's not in combat. It's not in combat.
You actually again, motherfucker. What is it?
You can't use Mage Hand in combat.
Himself. You can use it in combat. It just doesn't do anything.
If you use it in combat, it's not used for damage. You can't rip off anyone's nuts. No. I don't play D&D, but I follow the subreddits, so I see thing or two.
Mage Hand can it's like a spectral hand. A spectral floating hand appears in a space within 30 feet of you, and you can, as a bonus action on your turn, you can command it to move 30 feet per round to interact with stuff, but it can only pick up an object.
Claw.
Yeah, it can only pick up an object weighing like 5 pounds. 5 pounds or 10 pounds, essentially. So like, it can't do very much.
You can't tickle the Grundle.
I mean, you don't need more than 5 pounds.
Pick up a Grundle.
Force. You don't need more than 5 pounds of force to tickle a Grundle. Oh,
well, I got my Grundle tickled like a punching bag, I guess.
So. Oh, yeah. you're like a rough Grundle
speed
tickle?
Speed bag.
Yeah. Okay, so Darlington, mortally wounded in the fight, just as the elves return with the blue dragonstone. The three remaining blue dragons are descending upon him. The elves manage to activate the dragonstone, capture the spirits of the blue dragons.
Even if Darlington on the outside like a safe, like I got it.
Exactly.
That's sick though. Like a wounded silver dragon on the ground, and then there's three dragons plummeting full speed towards the earth, and the just vanish the instant before it touches it. Yeah.
The corpses of two blue dragons on the ground next to him, and he's just like lying there dying, resigned to his fate. When the elves show up and like activate this thing and suck the other ones out of the sky. So with the blue dragons gone, the ogres are we'll say a quick cleanup because it doesn't matter. The elves win, I guess, right? The blue dragonstone is buried with the others in the mountains while Orokin squares up against Cremaetia. Cremaetia would be beaten by Orokin, but would not be captured by the dragonstone. Instead, she manages to retreat. She flees to Takesis's side, who puts her into a deep sleep until she's needed again in the future to, quote, destroy all the elves.
Okay.
Other gods...
The way the elves beat all the orcs were arrows to the Grundle, of course. There's just orcs everywhere with one single arrow out of their
mouth. Yeah, yeah. It's Achilles' Grundle. It's where his mother held him. She dipped him in the river.
That's literally... Okay, I actually saw a text-to-speech, like, these nuts joke, which was, like, essentially that, where it's like, oh, Achilles' mother dipped him into the river, and then his brother by the balls, and, like, that's where, like, these nuts comes from. Like, I saw such an elaborate joke like that.
Oh my god. Long walk.
Yeah. So, all the gods, learning that the gods of magic had created the Dragonstones, interfered in this mortal war, had, like, given these tools to them, are pretty upset because this has not gone well for them in the past, interfering with mortal affairs. They punished the trio by banishing the gods of magic into the sky of Kryn. So Solitari, Nuitari, and Lunitari are the names of the moons. There's three moons on the plane, and that's the name of the moons floating around. Again, mixing of the different sources, like some of them, when the Grey Gem was stolen from Lunitari, it was actually like the moons were already created in their name. So like the gnome actually went to the moon to steal the gem and then dropped it like from the moon down onto the earth. That's Dragonlance part one. That's
nice.
Most cool. Of the Age of Dreams, all of the Age of Starbirth. We'll maybe revisit this world to discuss dwarves, the second dragon war, maybe more dragon wars, secret plans of the gods of magic turned moons, because apparently they weren't even mad about being turned into moons and they knew it was going to happen and they were kind of expecting it. That's all part of their plan. Who knows, huh?
Every time we talk about this, I want to play more. Like, especially when you give the scenarios where you look down, it's a mirror, it's a dragon above you, roll initiative. Yeah. Like, and I know we kind of, maybe for when we get together for Bobby's birthday, we can finish up that Dead Space thing we were doing, because that'd be fun.
Yeah, we were playing Starfinder, and there was a corpse ship.
We left off at the corpse ship. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like the show, consider leaving us a review. Consider telling your friends. It really helps. We've done such a tremendous amount of growing. Thanks so much to all the Discord server boosters. We have a Discord URL now. I'll throw it to Jamie because he likes to talk about Discord, but what's going on?
Yeah, Jamie? So we're not sure how long this will work because it's only as long as our wonderful subs like you keep it up, but discord.gg/loreboys. It just will bring you to us now. We got our own Earl. It's thanks to people like Skull, Lucy, Bjorn, I Am Dwarf, Magnus the Pink, Saucy, to name a few, Avocado Man. I think Jodo might be one too. Honest Dawn is one.
There's too many to name at this point.
for she. But anyways, we've gotten the final tier of Discord, which is supposed to be better audio quality. We've got more emojis than we know what to do with.
We're just like our double chins at this point.
Yeah, we got an animated banner that we have to use and stuff. Anyways, get into the Discord. It's hotter than it's ever been. Hanging out in there. I posted my brag screenshot of beating Spyro 1 100% in under 6 hours today. So lots of fun stuff going on in there.
And a selfie of him and his... He posted a screenshot of 100%. But
oh, okay. 100% under 6, 120 in 606.
There we go.
And okay. He also posted a selfie of him in the glasses. If you're wondering what an actually looks like, you can see the face that we actually do.
Oh, it's in the Prime. That was only in Prime.
Is that Prime only? Damn.
Maybe you guys will, once I get a nice photo of myself, I'll post
it. Hey, yeah,
that would transition well into the Prime shill, but we're gonna jump to Instagram and what's going on in Peter's world first, because he's had an exciting day. And I feel
at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. Obviously, I've been talking about it for a very long time because it's a staggering amount of work to do by yourself, but I've been working on a comic. I spent the entire day with my publisher today and a wonderful cameraman named Tim. Whose last name I did not get, but he just rocked up with two incredible cameras. We shot a bunch of promo stuff. So I think the idea right now, at least the discussion we had, is that we're going to have a promo video out in like mid-April about the comic that I've been working on with like a lot more stuff, because I'm like, I've done a lot of work recently, right? Like, and I know there's not a lot out there to like show people, but like the problem is, of course, we have to sell the fucking thing, so I can't just like give away screenshots willy-nilly. I sometimes fall off my game, especially recently with work being a little wonky, but Lore Boys Podcast, you do get your title cards usually in big bursts, like 4 or 5 weeks in a row, and then I miss a couple and they all come late, but whatever. I mean, life do be crazy like that sometimes. But yeah, check out at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. Send us DMs. Yes. I know some people interact with us solely via Instagram, so if you want to say hi, feel free. Yeah. If you want to request merch, which is linked below, check Instagram. If you wanted a sticker, shirt, whatever, let us know. I've got the Photoshop files. I can put them up. Our current provider is like, it's like a 5-minute process. It's fantastic.
If you're like Mad Max, you might find that Lore Boys Podcast likes a reel here or there. Usually those are the ones that I'm sending to Pete. So if you see Lore Boys Podcast like this, it's because we laugh at it usually.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Eric with a K, patron, does send some pretty dank memes. So if you want to send us something, send us something ridiculous, feel free.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll only get a like, sometimes you get a message. It depends on whether or not I'm driving, right? Of course.
Yeah, so check out Squared Idea. They got some cool stuff, primarily Black Frontier.
Mostly mine, yeah.
Black Frontier. Sorry, I forgot the name. I kept wanting to say Pistol Shrimp. I was like, I know that was the working title and is not the actual title.
At the bar the other day, I called it Pistol Shrimp, and I was like, oh, fuck, got it wrong. Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. I got it right. I know it's okay. Check out Squared Idea if you're into that stuff. And more on that to come soon, I assure you guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. Thanks, everyone, for supporting the show with your reviews and your talking to your friends and everything like that. We've done some awesome growth in the last little while, and it's all thanks to you guys. The show is possible because of you guys, and all thanks to you guys, and only worthwhile because of you guys. So really, 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 from the bottom of our hearts, thanks so much. If you guys want
a million downloads is coming up real soon, which is insane. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. We've only been saying it for a year, but it's coming up real soon.
It's a big number.
If you guys want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can get access to, I don't know, like we did an hour of bonus content this week where you will hear how we got this drunk, because we did it over the course of that bonus content before this episode.
Boys.com for selloutvacations.com.
There's 55 entries. There's a ton of bonus content on there. We do loser titles and some other fun games and stuff on there. So check it out if you guys are interested. Loreboys.com or
This week we got a whole hour from everything from like games we were playing to like personal anecdotes and lots of fun stuff.
A car crash I saw, an
18 mile long wire around the Hasidic community in New York City.
Explanation on evolution and how it's not just who dies; it's also how things live. And talking about others. Get in there, guys.
One of the loser titles is Jim.
No, I explained the word for that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, four of my loser titles are from the bonus content this week, which is more than the regular episode. I'm seeing.
Yeah. I don't think we said scooter update on the show.
Yeah. No. And I, if you know, I want to say, if you guys don't support Patreon, you guys don't trust big Patreon, you guys can always just send us money directly via Lore Boys Prime, of course. We're opening up a magic nerd school, of course. I mean, it's been in the works for a long time, but we're Jamie with his four eyes now is feels like he's probably capable of being a professor.
Honestly, I already have started carving rocks to capture both of you, but
anyway. Okay, well, look forward to you meeting my counter charm. My wand use, my wand handling is unparalleled on this plane of existence. So,
and 5.5 inches is completely average for a wand length. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I could only be killed with a strike to the grundle. So good luck.
Yeah, and he's got armor plated grundle. He walks like a crab everywhere, but he's so armored up down there. Yeah.
So enrollment is open. So crunch at us. Send your owls our way, and we'll get them, and we'll enroll you guys for our Magic by Nerd School.
Yes, sir.
I think that would constitute a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.